Matthew chapter 5. You know, we come to church and we hear the wonderful message of grace preached, and we hear the preacher tell us and the Word tell us that we need to take these principles, take these truths that we hear, and go home and apply them to our daily lives. And that's where it gets hard, isn't it? It's one thing to hear the message. James talks about being hearers of the Word, but also being doers of the Word. Because it's not enough to be a hearer of the Word, but you also need to be a doer of the Word. That's exactly the message of the parable of the sower, isn't it? Matthew 13, where he says that some of the seed didn't fall on good ground. And it evidenced itself later on in time. Because instead of becoming fruitful, it was unfruitful. It was cast away, or was eaten by the birds, or never grew to bear fruit. He said the problem is that you need to be careful how you hear the Word, because not only do you need to hear the Word, but then you need to take that Word and apply it into your life. And that's when it becomes difficult, isn't it? How do we apply these principles and these truths to daily life? Well, Jesus anticipates that, and in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, what we affectionately call the Sermon on the Mount, He gives us some other details. He tells us how to give to the poor. He tells us how we need to practice fasting. He tells us how that we need to show not judgment, but mercy upon others. He gives us so many wonderful principles, so many wonderful lessons here in this beautiful Sermon on the Mount. Just imagine that just for a minute with me, if you will. Imagine Jesus Christ sitting down, gathering His disciples around Him, and teaching them. What a precious, precious moment as Christ teaches His disciples. But I think the key to unlocking this Sermon on the Mount is found in the middle of chapter 5. The middle of chapter 5. Let's start reading in verse 17. We'll read down through verse 20. He said, it's as if He's saying, in all that you do, in all that I'm telling you, in all the ways that you apply these truths to the daily life, keep this one principle forefront. He says in verse 17, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven." Now, why would Christ say all that? Why would He tell us, listen, I am not coming to destroy the law, but I'm coming to fulfill the law? In fact, He says, every jot and every tittle of the law must be fulfilled. Why would He make this point so strongly? Well, the reason is because He's anticipating all the strife and all the accusations that He will experience from the Pharisees in the coming days. What was it that they accused Him of time after time after time? They said, "Your disciples are eating bread. They are picking corn on the Sabbath day. They're breaking the law. You are teaching people to be lawbreakers." They said, "You are healing people on the Sabbath day. You're breaking the law." And Christ says, "No, I'm not breaking the law. I am come to fulfill the law." And then He tells us what I believe is the key to all this whole Sermon on the Mount in verse 20. This is where it comes. This is His message to you and me. He says, "For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven." Pretty strong words there, isn't it? He says, unless your righteousness... What is righteousness? Righteousness is just simply what we do. What we do, what we say, what we think, what we wear, what we allow ourselves to listen to. Righteousness is what we do every day, every hour, every minute of the day. It's living. Our living, our lives are either righteous or they're unrighteous. Our actions are either righteous or they're unrighteous. He says, except your righteousness exceed, come, go better, be better than, go farther than the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now, on one side of this verse, we find a beautiful truth. And what is that? That our righteousness, the only way that our righteousness will ever exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, He says, listen, it's got to do that. And if it doesn't do that, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. But we know the beautiful truth that we've been hearing about for the last few weeks from as Daddy's been preaching on justification. The truth that what?
that Christ, as it's described in Jeremiah, that Christ is who? The Lord, our righteousness. Where our righteousness, where our lives come up so miserably short, Christ is the end of the law for us. He fulfills the law for us. Isn't that wonderful this morning? Know that Jesus Christ is your righteousness, and that if you are a lover and a believer in Jesus Christ, you are clothed in the righteousness of Jesus Christ. That's a beautiful truth. But still, there's a practical truth to this verse as well. What is he telling us here? And unless your lives, unless your actions are far better than, exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter. In no case, he says, no way, no exceptions, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven unless your righteousness is better than that of the scribes and the Pharisees. Now, that's pretty intimidating. Because at first glance of the scribes and the Pharisees, we find that they are very, not only intelligent and conscientious about what the law says, but they gave every bit of their energy to fulfilling the law, to obeying the commands of God, obeying the commands of the Old Testament law, to the very best of their ability. I'll ask you this morning, do you seek to obey the commands of God to the very best of your ability? No exceptions? Well, we would be pretty brash and pretty bold to say, yes, that's me. I do it perfectly. I don't think any of us would be so foolish this morning as to say that. And yet he says, unless your righteousness exceed that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. But at a closer look of the scribes and the Pharisees, we see something a little bit more condemning, don't we? What is that? Yes, they were conscientious. Yes, they gave it their very best. Yes, they did a very good job of obeying the commands of God. But what do we see is the problem? The problem is that their heart wasn't right before God, was it? And so all these good things that they did in their giving to the poor and in their praying and in their fasting and their attempts to obey the commands of God, it was either to get praise of men, to look good in front of others, or is to promote their own sense of self-confidence. And so we find that what Christ says to the Pharisees is, he says, on the outside, you're beautiful. You're wearing beautiful garments. But on the inside, what did he say? He says, you're a sepulcher full of dead men's bones. Christ says, it's all for you. It's all about the external. It's all about looking good for somebody else. It's all about making yourself feel good when you go to bed at night and say, oh, good, I've lived a good life today. I'm on my way to heaven. I feel confident that I am really in tune with God because I have done a good job today. My conscience is clear. He says, wait a second. He says, that's all the externals. He said, I'm not interested in the externals. God says, I look a lot farther than the externals. He said, I look a lot farther than what you're wearing or what you say or what you or the things that you do. He said, I look a lot deeper than that. I penetrate, he says, all the way to the thoughts and intents of the heart. He said, I can see your thoughts. I can see what's inside of you. Now think about that. I can see your thoughts. We can't see thoughts, can we? Thoughts are something that are in our mind. They're not something that you can see. God says, I can see your very thoughts. I can see the intents of your heart. When we really boil it down to what was really motivating the Pharisees, what was it? What was their righteousness all about? Their righteousness was all about pride. It was all about pride. If I criticize somebody else, I look better. If I bring to light their shortcomings, then I look better. If I give a lot of money and make sure everybody sees me, then I'm going to be promoted in their sight. I will look better. Behind all the Pharisees' actions was the spirit of pride. That is what Christ is telling us here in this verse. That unless your righteousness is not motivated by pride, like the Pharisees were, then you will in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. This morning, if God be our helper, I want to speak to us, to me, I say us, including me, on the subject of pride. Pride. What do we think of when we normally think of pride? We normally think of somebody else, right? That person who is so full of themselves, who's always just talking on and on and on about themselves, who is so proud, so full of the accomplishments of themselves and of their children and their families, and they love to tell you all about what they have done and what their children have done and all these things. I remember a few years ago, I had a meeting with a bunch of people in my company. And we gathered people from all over the country, and we had dinner in Memphis at some restaurant. And one of the newest people from our office had only been there for a couple of months, and he didn't know everybody's names yet. Didn't know what everybody did yet. And he had the misfortune of sitting right next to the executive vice president of the company. And so he's trying to make some small talk and exchange pleasantries, and he says, "So what do you do for the company?" The man looks at him with a look of absolute disdain. He stands up, beckons the waiter to close the door, and then for the next 20 minutes lets us know exactly who he is and what he's accomplished and what all he has done for the company and what he plans to do for the company. And we laugh at that and say, "Yep, that's my definition of pride. That's pretty disgusting. He is so full of himself." What is pride? What is pride? Pride, according to the dictionary, is a high or inordinate. That means higher than necessary, higher than what should be. A high or inordinate opinion of one's own dignity, importance, or superiority. To break it down to something that we can really grab a hold of, pride is self-esteem, self-love, self-righteousness, self-reliance. Notice in that last sentence, I said self four times. Self, 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 self. Pride is all about self. Pride puffs itself up. Pride will do anything to puff itself up because it's concerned only about self. Now when we look at pride from that standpoint, we think, oh, what a tragedy. What a tragedy that modern society and modern thinking is bringing to man, isn't it? Because the very things I just described are the very things that are promoted in our schools, in all walks of society. You have to care about number one first. How you feel about yourself is extremely important because you cannot become a very good citizen if you don't feel good about self. Yet God says all those things, self-esteem, self-reliance, self-love, self-righteousness, all these things are pride. And God says, "I hate pride." You think, well, you know, I don't think that I'm a very proud person. I know some that are, but I don't feel like that I'm one of those who can be described as being one who is beset with pride. Well, let's think about real life for just a few minutes, a few real life examples. Let somebody say a word against you or a cross word, and pride exposes itself pretty quickly, doesn't it? I remember a couple of weeks ago, Rachel and I were organizing our attic. Much needed organizing of the attic. So we were moving some shelves we had bought up into the attic to stack the boxes and bags of clothes on. And the first shelf went up just fine. I was up first one up the ladder, and I pulled it up, and she was directing and pushing the shelf up the ladder, and we made it up just fine. The second one, though, she went up first, and I was the one who was directing traffic and trying to go up the ladder. The second one just would not go up the same way the first one did. It was the same exact shelf, the same size, same dimensions, but it would not go up the same way. And I said, "What in the world is going on?" I said, "The first one went up just fine. What's going on here?" And Rachel said, "Well, probably because I'm not the one down there directing the traffic." Let me tell you two things that I know that I know. First of all, I know that I have absolutely no spatial ability at all. I am constantly trying to put square pegs and round holes and round pegs and square holes. I don't have much ability in that area at all. I can mow the grass just fine, but I don't have much ability figuring out spatial things. And I know that my wife is much better than me at that. I also know this. I also know that my wife loves me with all her heart. Okay? And she would never, never intentionally say anything to put me down or to make me angry. And yet, let me tell you what happened when she said that. I walked away from that letter and had to walk away for about 10 minutes because I was mad. I was angry. How dare she say that I don't have the ability to figure out how to get a shelf up a ladder? That's ridiculous. I was angry. Now you say, that's pretty silly. Yes, that was pretty silly. And what I realized a few minutes later was that was just my pride. Just my pride being exposed. You see, yes, we are full of pride. Maybe you made a dessert for this morning and yet somebody made the Sister Logan's lemon pie. And it's going to get all the compliments, and you know it'll get all the compliments today at lunch, and yours may be half eaten at the very most. And you think, well, what about me? I put in work too, and mine tastes good too, and mine's just sweet too. And yet they get all the compliments. Now, we would be that silly, would we? Or would we? Sometimes we do, and what is that? It's pride. Proverbs says, pride bringeth contention. Do you ever have contention and strife in your home, husbands and wives? You ever have contention in your home? I want to tell you that it comes from pride. I spoke this week with somebody who, on the outside, has everything going for them. Have several nice young children, a two-parent home. Seem to be very comfortable in life. And yet the strife in this home and the contention between the husband and the wife has grown at such a point that this person told me that the only reason I do not take my life is because I don't want to hurt the children. So I ask God every day to take me out of my misery. And you think, how in the world did it come to this point where they despair of even their very life? You know how it came there? It's nothing major. It's because a long time ago, both people refused to not have the last word. Refused to back down on any little discussion, any little point of disagreement. And you see that it's come to the point where the person despairs of their very life. Pride bringeth contention. You see, it's all over life. You find people who have become the most ugly little wrinkled inside, shells of the person they could be, because they became bitter and would not forgive or would not show mercy. You think, where does that come from? It comes from pride. From pride. The lack of forgiveness is pride. But they don't deserve to be forgiven. You don't know what they did to me. That's pride. It comes from pride. Children, when you leave somebody out on the playground and you want to buddy up just with your buddy, leave somebody there by themselves, you know where that comes from? It comes from pride. They're not as cool as we are, or whatever the word may be today. It comes from pride. And it's devastating. If you've ever said the words, I need some time for myself. The kids and the work and life, it's just driving me crazy. I'm just too busy. I need some me time. It comes from pride. If you ever said the words, I deserve this, or I don't deserve this, the source, again, is pride. You say, preacher, you spent a lot of time this morning. It's kind of an uncomfortable topic, but really, is this really one of the big sins? Well, we think of drunkenness or adultery or murder or something like that as being one of the big sins. But let's see what God thinks about this sin of pride. You see, the point Jesus is telling us in this passage is, in all your things, if you do all these things right, but you're still full of pride, you completely miss the point. In Proverbs chapter 8, Jesus tells us what His opinion of pride is. What is pride to Him? Proverbs chapter 8, verse 13. Proverbs 8, verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. We say, that's right. We don't like adultery. We don't like murder. We don't like raising our taxes. We don't like any of these evil things. We don't like the gay marriages. We hate all these bad and evil things. We're against them. That's right. We're on God's side. We're against these evil things. And yet God says what? The next word. He says, pride and arrogancy and the evil way and the forward mouth do I hate. You see, He doesn't mention any of those sins that we think of because we aren't committing those sins, are we? He says, the thing that I'm concerned about is pride. And let me tell you this. This is the most relevant topic of our day, I believe. Because Pride, to get right down to it, is the source behind every single sin. The source. In fact, pride is the essence of sin. One man said that rebellious pride, which refuses to depend upon God, that's self-reliance, and submit to God, and wants the honor that is really due to God, is the very core and essence of sin. God says, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogancy, and the evil way do I hate. In chapter 11, verse 2, listen to what he says here. When pride cometh, then, what follows pride? Then cometh shame. The word shame means disgrace. In chapter 29, verse 23, he says, when the proud shall be brought low. You see, the very intent that we have in our pride is what? Is to bring high, is to lift us up high. But what actually happens when we are consumed with the spirit of pride? What actually happens is that the very thing that we are intending results in the very opposite thing. God says, you are trying to bring yourself up. And He says, but what happens is disgrace, shame, being brought low is what inevitably follow every single time. He says, pride bringeth contention, pride bringeth down. And then the book of He says, pride cometh before destruction. For the rest of our time this morning, I want to take you on a simple walk through the Bible. Not the whole Bible, but through several examples of the Bible. And as I read these, the word that kept coming, the phrase that kept coming back to my mind over and over and over again, as I read these, I kept thinking, what a bloody trail. I want to take you this morning on the bloody trail of pride. What we're going to see is that we're going to see actions in people that came from a source of pride. And the end result every time was stunning and devastating destruction. Most of these come from the Old Testament. And Romans 15 verse 4 tells us that the things that were written aforetime, the things in the Old Testament, were written for our learning. These beautiful stories and these stories that we read and we teach to our children are not just given to us to teach us a nice story and to have a nice story to tell the children as we're trying to get them calmed down and ready to go to sleep at night. But they're written for our learning. You see, it's easy to look at the children of Israel and their constant complaining and their constant murmuring and their constant silly things that they did against God and say, what a bunch of foolish people. How silly they were. We would have done a lot better. But these things are given to us not to make fun of them, but they're given to us for us to learn about ourselves and not repeat the mistakes of history. You see, pride exposed in our hearts either causes us to become angry and more stubborn. A sermon like this, I'm not trying to make you angry, but it can cause me to become angry and more stubborn, or it can drive us to the place where we will ultimately be exalted the way that God exalts people. Let's turn first of all to Isaiah chapter 14. Isaiah chapter 14. Going all the way back to the very beginning here in Isaiah 14. The man that is talked about here is Lucifer. And I believe this is talking about Satan himself. And I believe that this is describing in Isaiah 14 the fall of Satan when he was formerly an angel of God. Let's read this starting in verse 12 of Isaiah 14. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground which did weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble, that did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness, that destroyed the cities thereof, that opened not the house of his prisoners? all the kings of the nations, even all of them lie in glory, every one in his own house. But thou art cast out of thy grave like an abominable branch, and as the raiment of those that are slain thrust through with the sword, they go down to the stones of the pit, as a carcass trodden under feet. Thou shalt not be joined with them in burial, because thou hast destroyed thy land and slain thy people. The seed of evildoers shall never be renowned. Now there are two lessons in this thing. First of all, the lesson to the child of God is this is some of the best news you could ever read. My friend Satan, your enemy, the enemy of God, your archenemy, the one who is trying to devour you every single day, is an absolutely defeated and ugly and humiliated foe. God says, you were so high. You were so high, and yet now the kings laugh at thee. Everybody says, is this the one that's been bothering us? Is this the one that's been giving us all this trouble? He's defeated, my friends. And even today, he is just a bruised serpent, a dying serpent, on his way out. And he cannot get at any of the children of God and destroy their faith and destroy their hope of salvation and their hope in Jesus Christ. Satan is a defeated foe. That's good news. But let's look at this from Satan's perspective for a minute. From his perspective, this is a sad and terrible thing. This is awful. He was described in verse 12 as what? As being the son of the morning or the day star. My friend, Satan, at one time Lucifer, had a very elevated and wonderful position. He was the servant and probably the archangel of the Most High God. He was a wonderful position, an elevated position. And yet, what did he say? This is not enough. I want to be like the Most High. And when he said that, and when he let pride consume him, he has ended up as a humiliated and a foe who is not really even a real foe, but a vanquished foe. He will be tortured for all eternity with all his minions of devilish angels. He was the absolute stunning loser, defeated. What a mandate. This is a mandate. God wins and Satan completely loses. But I want you to remember that one time he had a very elevated position. Now what in the world does it have to do with you and me? What does it have to do with you and me? You also, if you're a child of God this morning, you also have a very, very elevated position. Did you know that? You are in an elevated place today. You are described as being the sons and the daughters of God. God considers you as His sons and His daughters, and He has prepared an inheritance for you. And He looks upon you in such love that He gives you the gospel of Jesus Christ and tells you the good news of salvation and gives you hope in the midst of trial. He gives you hope in the midst of trouble. He tells you that I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. He tells you that His Spirit is with you all the time. That's wonderful. You're in an elevated and lovely position. A blessed position today. You have the riches of the inheritance of the saints waiting for you. He has gone back to prepare mansions for you. I mean, you are in an elevated position today. Did you know that? You are. We are. And yet, I want to tell you that every time we say, I don't deserve this, I do deserve this, we're saying that our position as saints in Christ just isn't good enough. We want more. Now, I know it's difficult. I'm a healthy person as far as I know. I'm not going through any terrible sickness today, as far as I know. But even in the midst of sickness, in the midst of difficulty in family, in the midst of difficulty in finances, in the midst of difficulty in a cruel and ugly world, in the midst of difficulty with bosses that are unjust, in the midst of any of these things, when we say the words, I don't deserve this, I want you to know that the path that we are following, frankly, is a satanic path. It's the same path that Satan followed. Our friends, let us focus. And it's easy for me to say, I know that. Things are going well for me as far as I know. But I want to say it to myself too. Let us focus on the elevated and lofty position that Christ has given us. And let us say, thank God for that. And whatever you give me, Lord, I'll take it. And I deserve a lot worse. And whatever you give me, Lord, I'll be thankful. And I'll trust you and I'll keep my eyes upon you any of these anyway.
because you're the best. You're the best. Satan followed a path that took him from a very high position to a position that was very low. Let's turn to our first parents in Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3. All these stories I know are familiar to you, but let's look at these again with the honest and open, even though it may expose us, let's look at these with an honest and humble view, saying, God, show me, where can I learn in these lessons? In verse 1 of Genesis 3, we read that the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said, ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden. But of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of them both were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together, and made themselves aprons. And they heard the voice of the Lord, God, walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of the Lord God amongst the trees of the garden. And the Lord called to Adam, etc., etc. The serpent comes to Eve. The serpent says, did God say that you're going to die? No, 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 no. He said he got it all wrong. The truth is that you're going to be wise. You're going to know about good and evil. And that happened, didn't it? What a nightmare revelation that was. Knowing about good and evil stinks, doesn't it? Wouldn't you rather just know about good and forget about the evil stuff? Knowing about good and evil is no fun at all. You think it's fun to endure pain? You think it's fun to endure crime? No, it's horrible. It's horrible. It was a horrible knowledge that they got about good and evil. He says, you're going to be wise. You're going to be like gods. And what did Eve and Adam do? They saw the tree was good for food. It'll be good for me. It'll taste good to me. It was pleasant to the eyes. It was desirable. And it would make me wise. Promoting myself, I'll be wise. And what happened? They ate of the tree, and they became wise, didn't they? They realized they were naked. They were not covered. They realized very soon after that, in the death of their own son, how a terrible thing the knowledge of good and evil really is. Now you think about this for a minute. I want to tell you, here's the lesson. The lesson is this. When you focus, when I focus on self. How can I promote myself? How can I better myself? When we are focused upon self all the time, our logic, our sense of reasoning gets all messed up. And we always forget the consequences. Think about this. Think about this just logically, just from a sense of reasoning for a minute. Here's this little serpent down on the ground talking to Eve and saying, no, 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 God's wrong. And here's God in heaven who created them, who gave them all, who created the serpent even, who gave them all these things. He's saying, no, I'm saying don't eat of it. Now think about it. Who are you going to listen to? This dumb serpent or the God of heaven? Of course, reason tells you, you listen to God. You listen to God. Of course you will. Of course you should. Anybody, it just makes sense. Any child would know that. But what happens when you are focused upon self? You will listen to anybody who will tell you what you want to hear. And the consequences always are forgotten. Do you think for a second that Eve and Adam would have ever taken that fruit if they knew that just a little short time Abel, their son, would be dead? If they knew that they would be exposed, they knew that they would be cast from the garden, they knew that they would know all that sin and evil, do you think they would ever, ever, ever have taken the fruit? The answer, of course, is no. Well, my friends, we also make some foolish mistakes in life. And it's always because we're focused upon self. What about me? Say, well, I prayed about this thing, but I know that it's right. And yet the clear commands of Scripture say that it's wrong.
You see, focus upon self will always mess us up. They exposed, they condemned nature for all time to be in sin. Look in Romans chapter 1, verse 22. We'll see the result of Adam and Eve's sin. The obvious, the clear, gets forsaken, gets ignored by all mankind as a result of Adam and Eve's sin. In Romans 1, verse 20, we read that for the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. He's saying there that, listen, when you look at heavens, Psalm 19 says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the earth showeth His handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night showeth knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. What He's saying there? He's saying the creation just screams to everybody. Of every race, of every language, it screams to everybody, God, God, God. Creation says there's a God. It's clear from seeing creation, the handiwork of this wonderful master. Oh, my friend, you travel around this globe. I just love to be down under right now in Australia just to see what it's like down there. But when you travel this globe and you see the way, it's the clarity of the handiwork of a master designer creator, you know in your heart that there's a God if you've never heard His gospel preached. He says these are clear things. But, verse 21, because that when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, and exchanged or changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like the corruptible man, the birds and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Wherefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature, what? More than the Creator. When Adam and Eve sinned, they became wise in their own minds, right? And nature, man's nature, throughout history has followed the same course. We're wise. We know what's good for us. And what happens? The things that were so clear, the eternal power and Godhead of God, were ignored, were forgotten. That God was forgotten in the heart of every man. And what did man begin to do? Instead of glorifying the obvious, the beautiful God of heaven, they began to glorify and worship who? They worshipped and served the creature, man, more than the Creator. How foolish! God says, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. What does that have to do with you and me? You say, we're not like that. We're children of God. We love God. And I hope you do. I hope we all do. But how can this apply to me today? That's the message. How can it apply to me? How can pride be a part of my life? I want, not right now, but at some point, reflect upon your decisions in the past week or the past year or the past 5 years. Reflect on those decisions and say, was God in those decisions? Did I look to God to guide that decision? Well, that hurts me. I can tell you a lot of times when I decided I was wise and I can figure this out. I know what I need to do and I'm going to do this. I know that I know that I know that this is what I need to do. And it turned out into a disaster. You see, my friends, we profess to become wise. God says we become fools. He says, look to me. You consult God. Look to me. I don't mean when we say consult God to say, okay, this is my opinion, her opinion, and this is God's opinion. Let's all vote now. That's not what I mean. I mean, God, will you guide my decisions? Will you guide the course of my life? Will you direct me? Will bless me, God, to be humble enough to follow you and see the true wisdom comes from above? Back to Genesis, if you will, for a few more minutes. In Genesis 4, we've already alluded to this briefly. But I want to go over this because it's a very key issue in our day. Genesis 4, verse 3. And in process of time it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel he also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. The Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and to his offering he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth, and his countenance fell. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door. And unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. And Cain talked with Abel his brother, And it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and slew him. You know, there had never been a murder ever before in history. Now today, you know, we get mad at somebody and get real mad at somebody and somebody really hurts us. Murder might come into our mind, but I just wish they were gone. Because we've seen murder. We know about murder. But Cain had never seen murder before. And yet the hatred of his heart was so vile and so intense that he slew his brother Abel. Why? Because of pride. Abel got God's respect, and I didn't get God's respect. There's plenty of examples of this in the Bible. Think about Saul and David. Saul, the great king of Israel, the mighty warrior king, did so much to lift up Israel and to help Israel. He conquered many foes. And yet David kills that one man Goliath. That one man Goliath that had caused him so much despair. David, not by his own strength, I mean, he couldn't even bear Saul's armor. Just get the stone. I mean, it might stay on the whim. Coincidentally, possibly it wasn't, but we know that. But he slays this huge giant with a stone. And they come home, and the victory celebration starts, and the ladies are all out in the streets dancing and singing. And what are they singing? They're singing, Saul has slain his thousands, but David has slain his 10,000s. Now, instead of rejoicing in this loyal servant, David, who had helped him so much, what does Saul do? They go to dinner that night. And in the course of dinner, they're enjoying their good food. And Saul picks up a spear and throws it, trying to kill David. You say, well, I would never do that. No, I would never, ever try to kill somebody with a spear at dinner. Well, good, I'm glad. I'm glad. My friends, this is still very applicable, isn't it, to us. Have you ever, well, you're not a preacher, maybe you're not a preacher this morning, I'm a preacher. But I've sat in a congregation before and maybe at a meeting and I've preached a message, someone else preached a message. And after the service over, so-and-so over there got all the compliments. And I'm thinking, well, what about my one, my chopped liver? Where does that come from? Where does it come from? It comes from a spirit of pride. Jealousy. Jealousy and envy, my friends, I want to tell you, will destroy a church faster than anything else. When you look at the history of troubles among our people, I don't mean inside churches, but I mean among churches of our fellowships. I believe history will tell you very strongly that the major cause of division has not been so much points of doctrine, but the major cause of division has been much more, you could say, symptomatic, has been jealousy and envy among the leaders. Jealousy will destroy a family. Jealousy will destroy a church. Jealousy will destroy, it'll destroy. You see, in every one of these stories, my friends, we've seen people that were in good positions make a decision and an action based from a source of pride, a thinking about self, and every one of these has been stunning in its devastation, hasn't it? It's been amazing how devastating these things have been. A brother kills a brother. A husband and wife that are clean cast a whole history of people into the nature of sin. Satan, the angel of God, is destroyed. Let's look at a couple of more. Genesis chapter 12. We're not even out of Genesis yet. We have all these stories. Genesis chapter 12, verse 10. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, he said unto Sarai his wife, Behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, This is his wife, and they will kill me, and they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. Now we all know this story, but when you really think about it, it's almost unimaginable. First of all, for Abram to do it, and first of all, for Sarah to agree. But can you imagine this? A husband who is the sworn protector and the lover of his wife and the companion of his wife and the leader of his wife says, "Wait a second, you're a beautiful woman, and I don't want this. They may want you to be their wife." And so he will give her up willingly and lie. Why did he do that? What does he say in verse 13? "My soul shall live." My soul shall live. It's pride. Self-preservation. Have you ever told a lie?
just thought, and you got done telling the lie, you thought, why in the world did I tell that? I am an adult. I don't need to be telling lies. I'm an adult. And I just lied. You can see every time the source behind that lie, every time if you examine yourself, the source behind that lie, no matter how white the lie may be, the source behind that lie is always about preserving self in the view of others. Right? That's embarrassing. I just don't want them to know that I did that. So I'll lie about it. My friend, that's devastating. Thank God that Abraham and his wife recovered. And that God blessed them. And only by his mercy did he bless them. Abraham repeated the mistake again. So my friend, that's devastating. Devastating. The consequences of our lies when we are motivated by a source of pride. Chapter 13. The story of Lot. Lot and Abraham's servants have been fighting. There's not room enough for both of them. Abraham says to Lot, verse 9, "Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, I will go to the right. If thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. The story here is that Lot, without consulting God, only thinking about himself, sees that this land over here is well watered. Doesn't see that there's wickedness in the land. Doesn't see that he's close to Sodom and Gomorrah. He only sees this is good for myself. This will lift me up. This will increase my bankroll. This will increase my retirement. This will increase my standard of living. If I can have this land as well watered, I will make some moolah. You know, I think Lot, I know Lot, in retrospect, never would have done this, would he? You know what he lost out of this? The story is he lost his wife. His daughter's gotten all kinds of wickedness. He lost his dignity for sure. He was trying to promote his dignity. He lost his dignity. I mean, Abraham had to rescue him. The angels had to pull him out of Sodom. He lived in a place of horrid wickedness. His soul was vexed every day. I mean, he blew it in this decision, my friends. And I don't know if it applies to anybody here today, but I know that it applies all over this world today. Men, who are on blind ambition, thinking if I can just work a little bit harder, if I can just climb that ladder a little bit higher, if I can just put a little bit more time into this, it's going to benefit my family in the long run. I'm sure a lot of it would benefit his family. He had no idea it would destroy his family. And we see families destroyed all the time today. Because men are just so busy climbing that ladder. Climbing. Thinking about self. And at the end of the day, plenty of money in the bank account, but all kind of trouble with the children. All kind of trouble with maybe even the wife. My friends, let us never walk. Let us never act. I'm a source of pride. The consequences are devastating. One more. 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 8. Just briefly tell this. There's so many examples from the children of Israel of their murmuring and their unthankfulness, which comes from a source of pride. But in chapter 8, they wanted to be like everybody else. They wanted to be self-reliant. Remember, self-reliance, a refusal to depend upon God. And God had set up this system where He would have prophets and judges to rule the land. Ultimately, God was in control. He would speak through His prophets. He would speak through His judges. God was ruling His people. God was the authority over His people. And they said, this is not what we want. Look at verse 4. Then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel and to Ramah and said unto him, behold, thou art old and thy sons walk not in thy ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the nations. We want to be like everybody else. We have enough wisdom in our people. We can set up a king and he can rule us. We don't need the system, God, that you have given to us. My friends, what is the result of this? It was terrible. It was devastating. King is a few good kings, but most of the kings were horrible in Israel. Most of them were absolutely terrible. And in Hosea 7, verse 10, God finally says, and the pride of Israel testify to his face, and they do not return to the Lord their God, nor seek him for all this. The story at the end of the day was Judah was destroyed, was Jerusalem was destroyed, Samaria was destroyed, everything of Israel was destroyed, and God left his people. He left his people alone. Why? Because of their pride. He says, your pride is testifying to your face. My friends, it relies upon self. God wants a people who depend upon Him. God wants a people who trust in Him. God wants a people who look to Him at all times. Lord, lead us. Lead us, Lord. Never let it be said that I'm guiding myself. Oh, Holy Spirit, will You lead me? My friends, they say that we want to be led by the Lord. My friends, that our leading by the Lord is evidenced by our obedience to His commands and our desire to walk in truth and love and mercy before Him. The last story I'll tell you is the story of what I think is the apex of pride. It's the height of pride. It may say the depth of pride. Why did Jesus Christ die? You say, well, God ordained that, and that's true. What was on the human side? Why did Jesus Christ die? This man never hurt anybody. All he ever did was good for people, wasn't it? He served. He came to serve people. He was the most perfect example of humility and servitude that can be imagined. He came to serve. And yet he was killed. He was killed by an angry mob of murderers. Why did that happen? Because he exposed what? He exposed our pride. They said, we don't want somebody who tells us how to live. We don't want somebody who is so humble and comes from such a humble background. We want somebody to be a king, a glorious king over us and come and conquer the land. We want to be something in this world. We want to be somebodies in this world. And yet this man says the way to go up is to come down. No way! We don't want someone to come and try to be Lord and tell us how to live life. We don't want that. You see, he exposed them. And what happened? They took him to the cross. And they slew him without a second thought. And they even rejoiced in that slaying. It was pride. This morning, if you've been exposed, I know I have. I've told you some of my stories. Those were the good ones. Believe me. If you've been exposed, if your pride has been exposed, there's two reactions. The reaction of the Pharisees was to get angry and to destroy this man who brought this truth to light. The reaction of the other is to fall down upon your face before Jesus Christ. He says to all those who realize that you are weak, to realize that you are burdened, to realize that you are not exactly what you thought you were, He says, come to Me. You say, well, I've already done that. I was going to church a long time ago. I was baptized a long time ago. That's okay. Come to Him again. You can come to Him every day. Say, Lord, would you heal me? Lord, would you lift me up? You see, my friends, the whole of your life story hasn't been played out yet. But I want to tell you, don't think for a second. If you're one of those who is angry this morning or still ignoring the message this morning, don't think for a second that your story will end up any different than any of these people in here. Lots ended up in destruction. Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel, all these stories. Abraham, all these stories ended up so ugly, so sad. You say, well, that's not going to be me. My friends, maybe you won't slay your brother, but it'll still end up ugly. It won't end up any different. But God says those who humble themselves will be lifted up. God says, I bring low. And that's what pride does, isn't it? Pride brings us low. But He also says, but I also lift up. He brings us low and He lifteth up. You see, by humbling yourself before God, by begging for God's mercy and for His forgiveness, and by walking in love and mercy, and being not so full of yourself, but full of love for God and full of service to others, my friends, that is a place where you will be lifted higher, so much higher than you could ever have done on your own. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that you may be exalted in due time. May God bless you. If there is one today who has been exposed and you have not followed Jesus Christ, I want to tell you there is hope. There is healing at Calvary's tree. May God bless you.